You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
The main reason I attended last year's CASI Medical Conference was to listen to Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She's a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Now, prior to the conference, I had only watched many of her YouTube videos and interviews sharing her work on toxic environmental chemicals and her insights on the destruction of human health. She's truly a health maverick, and I'm so excited and honored to have her on the Wellness for Life show. Welcome. Welcome, Dr. Seneff.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You've got a PhD from MIT. Now, it's in electrical engineering and computer science. So what led you to do research on toxic environmental chemicals, and how long have you been going into this subject?
Right. I mean, I've always been interested in the issues of toxic chemical exposures. But I got really concerned maybe 12 years ago as I saw the autism rates going up exponentially, and I was very worried because I know that exponential growth gets really scary once the numbers start getting big. And I was frustrated because most of the research dollars were directed towards genetics. And although I'm well aware that there's a genetic component to autism, I felt that the exponential growth could only be explained by some kind of toxic exposures. And I wanted to get the answers for myself. So I just started investigating that, quite a long time ago. And that was when I really transitioned into my research into this area of toxic chemicals in the environment, which I'm now working on full time. Whereas before, I was doing something else. I was developing computer games to help people learn Chinese. So it was a complete switch in my focus of energy of my research at that point.
Well, when you started this 12 years ago and you started looking at the environmental issues and possible epigenetics of autism, what directions did you go and what really stood out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I spent the first 5 years looking at looking generally at various chemicals and trying to see if they were also going up and seeing if their method of toxicity made sense in terms of autism. And I was looking at the vaccines, and I definitely believe the vaccines are a factor in autism. To what extent they're the major factor, I don't know. But it's clear that they're connected to autism, in my opinion. And the increasing use of, the increased schedule for vaccines that's been happening ever since 1986 when they gave the industry a free ride as far as any kind of accountability for vaccine damage. You know, it's become a problem, and I know there's a lot on that. A lot of people are feeling that concern. But after 5 years of investigating, I felt very frustrated because I could see that there were certain symptoms in autism that clearly were a result of some kind of toxicity, but I couldn't figure out what it was that was causing them, particularly the relationship with the gut problem. The autistic kids clearly had an issue with a gut, and I kind of felt like that was where the autism began, you know, and I couldn't figure out what was causing that. And it was really very fortuitous that I think it was 2013, or 2012, I forget. I was at a conference, and there happened to be a Professor Don Huber, whom I'd never heard of. He was giving a 2-hour presentation on glyphosate, which was a chemical I didn't know what it was. I was completely ignorant. And I happened to attend that talk, and you know, it was just an epiphany for me because the things he was explaining as far as what glyphosate does to human health fit perfectly with the missing pieces of the autism puzzle, because they explained the things that were going on with the autistic kids could be explained by this chemical. And glyphosate is the active ingredient in the pervasive herbicide Roundup, which is all over the food supply. It's, you know, many yards are contaminated with it. People use it to control the weeds in their yards, and it's very pervasive in our environment. It is, in fact, the only chemical I've found whose usage has gone up exactly in step with the increase in the risk of autism. The two curves basically coincide when you look at them over time, over the past 20 years. It's remarkable how well they match.
So can you explain a little bit more about how it's so pervasive? Now, glyphosate, the way I learned about Roundup was many, many years ago. One of my gardener, in fact, he was trying to get rid of a couple of weeds growing in my grass and brought the Roundup out. And I'm someone who's completely pesticide free. I don't do anything chemicals in my practice. I don't have it in my home. So I just about, died when he came out with his little spraying bottle and wanting to zap out these herbs. But Roundup and glyphosate is used much more than just in gardens. It's used quite a bit in the agriculture industry. Can you explain a little bit about that? That's the reason why it's so pervasive.
Yes, and of course, this was also something that I was only vaguely aware of before. And of course, I knew about GMOs, and I even at that time wasn't clear where I stood on GMOs, genetically modified crops and whatnot. I instinctively didn't like them, but I didn't really have a good reason why at that time. And now I've come to realize that the real problem with the GMOs is the toxic chemicals that they expose you to, because the main genetic modifications in the crops are BT corn. So the BT is a gene that produces a toxin that kills insects. And then there's the GMO Roundup Ready crops, which includes corn, soy, canola, sugar beets, alfalfa. I mean, those are the main ones, and they're many of them are core foods of the processed food industry, core crops of the processed food industry. So these crops have been, glyphosate kills all plants except for those few that have been given this magic gene from a bacterium that protects them. And so that allows them to just spray the glyphosate willy-nilly from the airplane and not worry about it hitting the crop because the crop won't die. But unfortunately, the crop does take it up and incorporates it into its tissue, so you can't even wash it off. It ends up in your food in such a way that you can't get rid of it. And then the claim is that it's perfectly safe for humans, and therefore we don't care. And in fact, the government doesn't bother to test for it. I mean, we're extremely lackadaisical about this chemical. And yet we go, we worry about all these other chemicals that are much less prevalent in our environment. And yet we disregard glyphosate because it's supposed to be safe for humans. And the fact is, the studies that were done were really not properly conducted, and there was a lot of misleading going on, and the government was lax at that time, and they let the chemical get past the regulatory process without adequate studies. Way back when, like 1974, 1975, was when they first introduced glyphosate into the, into the food chain.
I just got this morning, it's really nice that you and I are having this conversation. I got it from the Environmental Working Group. I'm in their email list. They sent an email saying that hundreds of cancer patients, victims, and their families are filing lawsuit against that. Actually, Roundup has been part of the reason why they have cancer, that causes cancer. I thought that was super interesting, that now people are standing up and saying that we've got to do more. We've got to do more than blindly just spray the stuff on our food. And as you're saying, it's so ingrained in the food. It's not just on the outer covering. So you can't wash it. You can't use those veggie washes. You can't use vinegar to get the stuff off. It is in the tissues, meaning you eat it. And once you eat it, it can integrate into your own cells.
Right. Yes, and that's actually thousands of cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that are now coming before the courts. And the first case is ongoing over the past week or so. Just the past few days, it's been started. So it's quite exciting. Coming out of California, Robert Kennedy Jr. is involved as a lawyer in the case.
Yes, that's right. California, you have a tendency to be mavericks, just like you. We want to get everything. I mean, obviously, our state here, I live in California, obviously, but we are very, very concerned about the environment and what we're doing to planet Earth. So we're doing as much as we can, and I'm so glad that it's happening. So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned about it's integrated. The glyphosate gets integrated into us. And in the lecture that I listened to, when you were talking about the effects of glyphosate, you mentioned about an amino acid called glycine. Now, our listeners are, a lot of them, of course, are not scientists. So if you can, in layman terms, give us an explanation of what is going on how glycine, the amino acid, is linked to glyphosate.
Very, very fascinating, actually. And this is where I focus a lot of my research now. you know, it began with noticing that glyphosate was disrupting the gut microbes, which is certainly true, and it's been shown that it preferentially kills the beneficial bacteria. And the other thing is that it chelates minerals. These are some features of glyphosate that are well accepted. It binds very tightly to minerals, making them unavailable, and so it disrupts the mineral homeostasis in the body. And those two things are both show up in autism. We've also written about how it affects sulfate synthesis and methionine supply. These are sort of crucial amino acids involved with sulfur. So this whole sulfur system becomes disrupted with glyphosate, and that shows up as sulfate deficiency and a methionine deficiency, glutathione deficiency. These are all things that are seen in autism. So all of those lined up very nicely. But it took me longer before I realized that there was this other issue, which is the glycine analog aspect of glyphosate. Glyphosate is, in fact, a glycine molecule with extra stuff stuck onto its nitrogen atom. And glycine is a coding amino acid. It's actually the smallest coding amino acid. It has no side chains, very tiny molecule. And it is one of the basic building blocks of proteins. So proteins are assembled as beads on a string using the famous DNA code. And so there's a code that says, put glycine here as the assembly process is going on. The coding machinery is looking for a glycine molecule to put next into the chain, and it sees glyphosate and it mistakes it as glycine. This is my theory. This is something that Anthony Samso first proposed to me. He and I have been collaborating on several papers. And at first I was skeptical, but then when I started to look at the research literature, it made enormous sense. And it started to explain all the correlations we're seeing, not just with autism, but with a huge list of diseases and conditions that are also going up dramatically these days in America and increasingly throughout the world. So what we think is happening is that when a protein is being assembled, glyphosate is grabbed up by mistake, it's stuck in there, and then glyphosate has very different properties from glycine. And there are certain proteins for which it has to be glycine or it doesn't work at that particular spot. So you can actually go rummaging through the research literature to find those proteins. It's quite a fun process that I'm still doing. It's sort of an ongoing task for me because you can always find new proteins. Oh, my God, I didn't know this one, too, is affected, you know. And when you find a protein that's affected, and then you look at the diseases that are going up, and you say, oh, my God, well, this one makes good sense because it relates to that disease. You know, and you can start to hook up the proteins with the diseases, and you can tell the entire story of why we're getting obese, why we're getting diabetes, you know, why we're getting it's related to heart disease and various cancers, kidney cancer and liver disease. I mean, just lots of things. Of course, the gut problems, colon, you know, inflammation in the gut, pancreatic cancer, many, many diseases that are going up dramatically can be connected to specific proteins that would be disrupted by glyphosate if it was substituting for glycine in those proteins and messing up their ability to do their job.
Yes. I just want the listeners to understand that the glycine, being that it's a single amino acid, it is one of the building blocks of protein. Could you just imagine if you're putting something else replacing it, then whatever it's supposed to make, whether it's a heart cell or an enzyme to help you digest, or a hormone, or even your brain and neurotransmitters, all of this. And, of course, glycine is one of the building blocks for glutathione, which is the master antioxidant. Then could you just imagine where the disruption is going to be? Disruption, of course, then will cause disease, because you're not going to be able to be building the real pure proteins that you naturally been building that we've been building, right? So then you end up having genetic changes. This is truly genetic changes.
Yeah, it's epigenetic because it's not actually changing the code.
It's making a mistake when it sees the code.
It thinks the code means glyphosate instead of glycine.
Right. So the RNA transcription the coding, the little amino acids are not what's going on to that to build the protein. That's where the missing link is then.
Yes, yes. It's really fascinating. And, you know, I found papers on Alzheimer's disease that talk about amyloid beta plaque, which is like, you know, that's the thing they talk about with Alzheimer's. They're trying to develop drugs that suppress amyloid beta plaque. That's kind of more where they've spent most of their research dollars in Alzheimer's research. And the amyloid beta protein actually contains a specific sequence. It's so fascinating. It's called GXXXGXXXGXXXG. So four glycines that are interspersed with three amino acids, you know, three times. So it's like this equally spaced glycine residues. X means wild card. So in between, it could be anything. but it's always glycine every fifth one, right, over a period of four glycines. That particular sequence is quite a unique sequence that shows up in amyloid beta. And they have found that the piece of amyloid beta that is toxic contains that sequence. And they're suspecting that that sequence is the problem. But they don't understand. These glycines have been there forever in that protein. You know, it goes way back in history. And yet now all of a sudden it's toxic. I mean, what's different about it? Well, what's different is that it's not glycine, it's glyphosate. And that's causing the protein to misfold. And it can be shown that the glycines are essential for it to form its proper, it's called an alpha helix, that it forms an alpha helix structure, because proteins fold in different ways. And if those glycines are replaced by things that are bulkier and negatively charged, which is what glyphosate is, then the protein misfolds into something called a beta sheet, which is soluble, and that goes into the cytoplasm instead of getting into the membrane. And when there's enough of those accumulating, they start to glom together and form this plaque. So it's like, of course, right? Glyphosate's going to cause that. So it makes good sense to me. And, of course, we have totally. Alzheimer's going up exactly like autism in step with glyphosate usage. It seems clear to me, you know.
Well, you know what would be really interesting? Maybe you already know this, whether different countries, because there's some countries, obviously, they ban any forms of glyphosate GMO into their country. And curiosity here in me is that are there connections? And you can see that the Alzheimer rate is much lower in those countries comparatively to the United States, because we are the biggest users.
We are. It's very sad. I mean, we are so cavalier about glyphosate compared to just about any place else in the world, and GMOs as well, for example. Many countries require GMO labeling. We don't. And many countries are worried about glyphosate. We're not. You know, our government thinks it's fine. It's very frustrating for me to live in this country where it's the worst, you know, the worst situation. And this lack of a willingness to test the food for it. We've had to have organic consumer organizations and people like Zen Honeycutt of Moms Across America. They're taking the initiative to test the foods and find the glyphosate in them. And they're finding high levels in Oreo cookies and Cheerios, you know, non-GMO Cheerios, high levels of glyphosate, because the oats are sprayed right before the harvest. I hadn't mentioned that, but there's the GMO crops, and then there's also other core crops like wheat and oats and sugarcane that are sprayed right before harvest. It's used as a desiccant. It actually kills the plant, causes it to go to seed, increases the yield, you know, maybe chasing a frost so that you can avoid the plant getting killed by the frost. Particularly in Canada, a lot of the wheat in Canada is sprayed with glyphosate right before harvest in order to, keep it from getting caught by the frost. So people they think there's no downside because they consider this chemical to be so safe. But in Italy now, they're finding out they've been using some of the Canadian wheat, you know, in their pasta, and they've been testing it, and they're like, oh my God, this stuff's got glyphosate in it, and they're refusing. They're starting to refuse to buy the Canadian wheat, you know, because its glyphosate levels are too high.
I think countries actually need to do that, because the less demand there are, then obviously the company's going to make less. They won't need to make as much.
I know. You know, I like that when they come up with specific products that get attacked for glyphosate levels. It really makes that company have to deal with the problem when it starts to become a media issue, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm from Korea, Dr. Seneff, and the one thing that I'm studying right now, because I'm writing my third book, and it's all about kimchi. So
kimchi is really healthy.
Yes, it is. It's a fermented food. And in Korea, there actually is an institute. It's scientists all. It's called the World Institute of Kimchi. And they study kimchi, and I've been to it just this year doing my research for my book. And I couldn't believe how much information there are about how kimchi and the diversity, the bacterial diversity, actually reduces pesticides, the types of pesticides. It can actually eat it up and break it down.
Well, that's right. And in fact, I realized I was starting to look at glyphosate degradation. And it turns out glyphosate has a particular bond that's unusual. It's what's called a CP bond, carbon and phosphorus bond. Those are very unusual in nature, and that bond is very difficult to break down, and most species can't break it down, and that's why glyphosate pretty much is inert. I mean, people don't. Monsanto claims that you get exposed to it, it goes out quickly through your feces and through your urine, and it doesn't react with anything, you know, which is good news if that were true. But of course, because it gets integrated into your proteins, that's completely not true. But these microbes, Acetobacter in particular, which is present probably in kimchi, I would be really surprised if it's not. It's in apple cider vinegar, it's in sauerkraut. You know, it really feels like in kimchi as well. And that microbe is one of the very few that can actually metabolize that CP bond, break down glyphosate, and actually use it as a resource for phosphorus.
Did you say it was an acetobacter strain, genera?
Acetobacter, yeah.
Acetobacter, gotcha. Absolutely. I mean, sauerkraut and kimchi has very similar, but there's there's over 100 different bacterias and lactic acid bacteria.
Right, lactobacillus and bifidobacteria. Those two in particular are especially sensitive to glyphosate. They're easily killed by it. And studies have shown that, whereas Clostridia are hardy by comparison. And so people get a Clostridia overgrowth because the lactobacillus and the bifidobacteria get killed by glyphosate. And Clostridia overgrowth is also another thing that's linked to autism.
Oh, I see that quite a bit in my practice when I do the stool testing. And even individuals who come in with diarrhea, often it's caused by Clostridia, excessive amounts of Clostridia.
Right.
That's something that's been much more prevalent. More so, it used to be Campylobacter jejuni, which is a bacteria that's very common in chicken and egg, you know, from contamination of raw chicken and eggs. It's now switching over. Sure, we still get it, but Clostridia is definitely going up.
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Well, let's talk about what can we do. I mean, it's everywhere. I'm someone that eats all organic as best as I can. I even take kimchi whenever I travel. I do my best. I can pack it nicely without stinking it up in my luggage. But I end up, you know, eating as well as I can, free of these chemicals, free of these toxins. What can our listeners do to help their health, for their health, their family, and their loved ones?
Certainly converting to an organic diet, I think that's very, very important. And I've heard actually testimony from people who have, even something as bad as autism has been reversed simply by going organic. So it's quite remarkable. In some cases, obviously not always. Then, as you said, eating probiotics, and kimchi is wonderful. There's, of course, Japanese natto, which is kind of hard to take for us Americans, but that's also very, very useful as far as the probiotics in it. And, you know, yogurt, and I think cheese is good, and organic cheese, and sauerkraut, those kinds of things. Apple cider vinegar, I really recommend making your own salad dressing out of apple cider vinegar and organic olive oil, for example. You can make a delicious salad dressing without too much effort. People sort of think they have to buy salad dressing already made, but that's not true, you know. And so you can just make your own out of organic sources. And I recommend eating foods that are high in sulfur because I see that glyphosate is really disrupting the sulfur system. So people typically have a sulfur deficiency problem. And many people have trouble handling sulfur. Like if they eat sulfur-containing foods, they get a reaction to them. And that, I think, is due to the glyphosate poisoning, the effect of glyphosate that disrupts the gut microbes and causes you to not be able to properly utilize sulfur to put it into the methionine. The gut microbes would normally make methionine out of sulfur-containing foods, such as cruciferous vegetables or onions or garlic. You know, those kinds of foods are really nutritious. But if you have a sensitivity, it's an indicator that you're getting poisoned by glyphosate, I believe. Some people have an actual genetic problem, but I bet in many cases it would go away if you reverse, switch to organic diet, and then you'd be able to eat sulfur-containing foods again. And you should do that because the sulfur is really, really important for your health. The autistic kids have only 1/4 of the level of sulfate in their blood compared to normal kids, and they also have reduced glutathione. Glutathione, as you mentioned, is a tripeptide, and one of the amino acids in glutathione is glycine, and I suspect that glutathione is getting glyphosate substituted for glycine, and that's messing it up. And you see low glutathione in association with autism, and low methionine, you see methylation pathway problems, and that's coming from methionine. So you can see all of these effects of glyphosate in the autistic kids. And, you know, there's other things I think that glyphosate is causing as well. We're seeing all these autoimmune diseases like asthma and eczema, ADHD. You know, kids are having a lot of emotional problems these days. I think it's all connected. Serotonin, for example, is derived from the pathway in the gut that glyphosate disrupts in the gut bacteria. So the gut bacteria produce something called aromatic amino acids using a pathway that our cells don't possess. And Monsanto likes to say this pathway is disrupted by glyphosate, And Monsanto likes to say, ha, 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 that's great because we don't have that pathway and therefore we're immune to glyphosate's effects. But what they're overlooking is that our gut microbes have that pathway and they use it to produce really important nutrients for us, which are precursors to serotonin, melatonin, melanin, the skin tanning agent, thyroid hormone, dopamine, and epinephrine. All of these really important hormones and neurotransmitters and the protection from the sun, all of these things come from that pathway where the microbes are producing the precursors to those products that are so important for our health.
I feel that maybe the microbes are really going to be the ones taking better care of us for the glyphosate poisoning, you know, ultimately.
Right.
What can we do? And hopefully our microbes are going to get stronger and we got to protect our gut. We got to feed our gut properly and then strengthen our innate immunity, internal gut, I think is going to be one of the best ways to restore our health. I really enjoyed this, Dr. Seneff. Wow, thanks so much. You know, I understand you even wrote a book about this. People can go out and get this on Amazon. And the book is available on Amazon, is it not, right?
Sorry?
Dr. Seneff, your book, Cindy and Erica's Obsession to Solving
yes.
Today's Health Crisis, Healthcare Crisis.
Yes, and yes, I wrote that book. I wrote it mostly before I discovered glyphosate. I discovered glyphosate about two-thirds of the way through the book, so it shows up late in the story. But it was a really fun thing to do. It's a novel, and I enjoyed it, and it's now available. I let it sit on my computer for many years before I finally got it published, but it's out there. You can get it on Amazon, either electronically or physical copy.
I'm so glad that we were able to share your information. And, you know, I'd love for you to come back one day and talk more about sulfur, because sulfur being, I believe, the third most highly used mineral in our body, we need to know more about it.
We do. I think it's an overlooked mineral, and we think of that there's plenty of it. You know, we don't worry about deficiencies in sulfur, and we should, and people don't realize. And it really because of the disruption of the sulfur pathways by glyphosate, I think many people are suffering from sulfur deficiency problems.
Absolutely. I think also the way you connected it with cholesterol, increase in cholesterol, which is, of course, a huge problem. I can't say that it's a problem as in like cholesterol causes disease, but I think the way we need to utilize cholesterol is important. And you actually give us a very, very interesting connection with that and sulfur.
Right. Yes, that would be fun. We could do that on another time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What a great interview. I know you've learned a lot here, and please share this show with your friends and family. And you can go to iTunes and give us some great feedback. Support is important here to continue our show. Do connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. And if you need more guidance, I want to dig deeper into your chronic health issues. I work with you on phone and Skype consultations, and this is with people all around the world. So you can go to my website, drsuzanne.com, for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.